Hello and welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
I'm Jordan Crook.
And I'm Daryl Etherington.
And this week we are going to be reviewing the new season of Stranger Things. And Daryl at least has finished the whole thing, but we'll get to that. I don't want to spoil anything from our review. Before we do that, I mean, it's been kind of a slow week news-wise, but one thing that was pretty interesting was the announcement that Netflix is going to be making a series based on the Sandman comic book, which was created by Neil Gaiman, Sam Keith, and Mike Dringenberg. It was certainly a comic book that, in my teens, it was probably my favorite comic at the time. Like, I read it religiously. It really shaped a lot of my ideas of what I like in comic books. Daryl, it sounds like you were not as big a fan of it.
I don't know. I mean, it was always the weird one to me. It was like, what is this? Where are my punchy superheroes that just punch each other and whatever and fly around? Does it even have that? It just seems strange. So I just didn't want to risk it, you know? Didn't want to take a chance.
Sounds like I would really like it.
I think you would. It's basically a fantasy story about this character who's, I mean, sort of kind of called the Sandman, but also known as Dream and as Morpheus, and he's the Lord of Dreams. And it's basically, they tell all different kinds of stories within that framework, some of them taking place in the dream world, some of them taking place in the real world. And it was one of the breakthrough comic books where it wasn't about superheroes. I mean, there were some superhero characters at the beginning, but over time they kind of dropped all of that. And it was also the first series where they just started collecting everything in trade paperback so you could buy it in bookstores. So it was, yeah, I think for a lot of people of my age and maybe a little older or a little younger, was really important and meant a lot. And I think it's one of those things where people have been trying to make it into a movie or a TV show for a long time, but for a whole bunch of different, you know, various reasons, it seems like it never quite works out.
Yeah, is it also like the ongoing one is not really, it's not Gaiman anymore, right? Like they've just handed it off to somebody and serialized it, because it still exists and still publishes
sort of
monthly or something.
So the main thing is there was the main Sandman series, and that ran from like 1989 to 1996. And one of the things that was sort of unprecedented about it was that when Gaiman didn't want to do it anymore, they were like, great, well, it doesn't really make sense to keep this going without you. We'll just end it. It's done as soon as you're done. And so they've done follow-up series and they've done like spin-off series. And so what I think is going on right now in the comics is something called, I think the Sandman universe. So there's still no comic that's like about that Sandman character, but they're like letting other people write about some of the other subsidiary characters. But the main Sandman comic has been done for 20 years now.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I now that you describe it and I read your article, I'm like, I'm more interested than I was before. I think I kind of just like looked at the cover art and was kind of like, I don't immediately understand this or recognize this, so I'm going to skip it. But it was like a triage decision of like, I don't really want to think about this any further than I have to. Plus, it's a thing where if you're reading stuff weekly, it's like, how do you dive in? But it sounds like a good idea would be just to go back and get the original series in paperback format and start there, right?
Yeah, you can read the whole series. And the nice thing about it is, I mean, it's long. It's 10 volumes is the main series. But it's still, compared to a lot of comic books, where you're like, how do I start with Batman or Captain America or whoever? And there's just, you know, 50 years of comics to go through. And some publishers are better than others about like pointing out like good jumping on points. This is like a very complete thing in and of itself. So you know that you'll start it, and if you like it, at some point you'll finish it, and it doesn't have to sort of drag on forever. Mm-hmm. But I think from a streaming perspective, it's also an interesting story because DC has its own streaming service, and it's not running on DC. It's going to run on Netflix. According to The Hollywood Reporter, which broke the news, this is going to be the most expensive series that DC has ever made, which makes sense because it's a very creative, you know, wild fantasy story. So it could, you know, I can imagine they need a lot of special effects, a lot of different locations. And I think it sort of is a sign, though, that maybe DC Universe is not long for this world, or because it probably doesn't have the resources to make a show like this.
I mean, that's what I was thinking. Is that why Netflix is involved? Just because they have the money to foot the bill? Because I know, I mean, DC Universe, I watched Titans and I was fine. I thought Titans was actually entertaining. And then I started to watch, you know, what's it called? With the oddball.
Doom Patrol.
X-Men knockoff. Yeah, Doom Patrol. So I started watching Doom Patrol. Also good and interesting. And I do like seeing fellow Canadian Brandon... oh goodness,
Brendan, you know, Fraser.
Brendan Fraser, not Brandon. Brendan Fraser.
Good old Brandon.
Yeah, our buddy from The Mummy.
Brandon and George Canada, of the Jungle.
George of the Jungle, Encino Man, a classic. I mean, they're good, but they're weird, and they also they feel like almost the CW, but not quite in terms of like production level. So. I would imagine
that's
if you want
bad to when you can't CW. Quite reach the CW.
Sorry, I meant on the other side of the other side of the
almost
spectrum.
As bad so like, as CW.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. Okay. All right. Fair
still,
enough.
Still rough.
Yeah, still not high praise, but like this clearly deserves something. Like, because if I think of this, I think like kind of Legion, maybe in terms of visuals. Like Legion is a really ambitious visual project. Both like the comic and the FX series that was made based on the comic, which I think is a beautiful series in terms of like the filming and the shots that they do and all that work. So to me, this deserves at least that kind of treatment. Right. And I don't know. Do you know Legion, Anthony? Would you say they're similar in terms of the vibe or whatever?
I don't know that there's any TV show that I think is exactly the same, partly because over the course of the comics, they like, that the style and the genre kind of changes from issue to issue. I mean, that was part of what was so interesting about it. So there are storylines in it that are kind of like Legion in that they're set in the current day, but are kind of psychedelic and crazy. But then there are storylines that are set in the Roman Empire. There are storylines that are set in ancient China. William Shakespeare is a character. And so there's also an element of just, I don't know. It's hard to imagine. It's hard to pinpoint any comparison because most TV series tend to be like, all right, they take place in one place and, you know, at least start out in one or two locations. And then maybe if you're like successful, like Game of Thrones, it becomes like a whole world, but it's still telling one story. Sandman is really different. I mean, maybe the thing it's closest to is something like Star Trek or something, not in the sense that the tone is, but in the sense that every story, it could be potentially in a whole new world. And so I have to imagine that creates a lot of challenges for, you know, making a TV show.
Right. Yeah. I mean, your point in the article, it was like, this is super ambitious and but you also pointed out that some of Gaiman's other works have been successfully translated, even if it seemed improbable at the time. But they are different still, because those are that's still a singular kind of setting,
right? It's American Gods and Good Omens, right, which are both based on single novels, which are, you know, still ambitious and I think probably special effects wise challenging things to adapt. But like you said, yeah, it's one story in a way that Sandman I think is not.
Right. Those are great, by the way. I haven't seen Good Omens yet, actually, but I love American Gods, and I've been watching.
I didn't know it was a show already.
Yeah, it is. It's in the second season, actually, on Amazon Prime.
I started American Gods. So Maria actually introduced me to Neil Gaiman, and I started with Neverwhere, which I think is like more of a kid-friendly book than his other stuff. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. I mean, it's not... He's written some novels that are actually young adult novels, like Coraline, and I think Neverwhere is published as an adult novel, but I read it at,
yeah, like it's,
yeah, it's an adventure story. I read it at probably 14 or 15, and I you know, yeah, it was perfect for a 14 or 15 year old.
And then I never got around to finishing American Gods, to be honest, but I liked it. It wasn't like American Gods' fault; it was my fault. But
yeah, you should try the series. I think you probably like it. It's a really faithful adaptation of the book, and possibly more entertaining, just depending on what your preferences for receiving media.
Content consumption preferences.
Yeah, yeah. Great acting in it. Like, good, just a good collection of actors, including The guy who plays the main character is from The 100, another one of my favorite guilty pleasure awful television shows. So yeah, I mean it actually has real actors in it too, but he's good in the role that he has. Do you know with this one, are they doing like a what's the name for that type of series where they just do a collection of independent stories?
Like an anthology series.
An anthology series? Is that part of the plan, or did they reveal anything about?
They haven't really said anything. I would assume they're going to try to make it more serialized than that. There'll still be this one, you know, the Sandman character kind of tying it all. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're rewriting the series to make it more like it's all one story rather than there's a little bit of a story and then random stuff happens for, you know, four or five issues. Right. I could be wrong. I mean, and I wouldn't be surprised if they're trying to figure all this stuff out now. And we should say, so Gaiman is involved. He's going to be one of the writer. He's going to be involved at least in writing the first episode with David S. Goyer and Alan Heinberg, who wrote Wonder Woman, or was one of the writers on Wonder Woman. So I imagine they're figuring a lot of this stuff out.
I wonder if, like, instead of leaning into an anthology, they do like something more where these characters are like tied together somehow. Like you think they're separate stories until they're not. Yeah. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I say that knowing nothing about anything that you guys are talking about.
with David S. Goyer, he wrote. He's done a lot of comic book work already, right?
He did the Blade movies. He did he was one of the writers on the Christopher Nolan Batman movies. He was he wrote Man of Steel.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah. I thought that, yeah, he was familiar. So at least he's familiar with kind of the thing. But again, your point is still that a good point that it's really quite different from any other kind of comic property, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I haven't read it because it struck me immediately as different. So
you want.
No. Hey, I read a lot of, I actually did that stupid first Amazon purchase thing today. And I read the first Amazon thing in my history, at least for my Canadian account. I'm curious actually now if I actually started shopping on Amazon.com before Amazon.ca even existed. But it's Omega, which is a great hardcover graphic. Yeah. So that's just a recommendation. If anybody hasn't read Omega, it has a subtitle too. I forget.
Omega the Unknown.
The Unknown. Yes. Yeah, give that a read. It's still there. It's still available, I think. So go buy it.
Yeah, and people should also go read The Sandman if they haven't.
Yes.
It is actually really, I think for a lot of people, it's a great jumping on point for if you're not someone who reads comic books, isn't that interested in superheroes. It's a really good series to start with. And
well, I have a suggestion, actually, because can we talk about something that I cared about in television this week? Or...
Okay. Yes, can I jump by in all here? Means
can I just speak for Jordan? So Are You the One, Daryl? That's one thing that I'm really excited about. Yeah. TV. Did you watch
I watched the new episode too. Yeah, I watched
Anthony,
I'm all
do you know what we're talking about?
I have no idea what you're talking
can
about.
I tell you, can I tell
Please.
You are you excited? Okay, so Are You the One is in its eighth season. It's an MTV show that mixes like The Bachelor with Survivor, Big Brother-ish with Real World. So it's like Real World styled production and partying and casting. But for the eighth season, they decided to put sexually fluid people in the house together.
Oh.
But it's a game show. So how it works is like there are 16 people and doctors and psychiatrists and MTV witches have said these are the eight perfect matches of the 16 people. They've already put them into pairs, but the people don't know who their match is. And they have 10 weeks to get eight perfect matches to like guess them right. And they win $1 million if they get them right. And they have like certain ways of getting that information. So like once a week, you can send one couple into this thing called the truth booth and it'll tell you like for certain whether or not it's a match. And then every week they have the matching ceremony where they get into pairs and beams of light shoot up in the air to show how many matches they get correct, but not which ones. It's everything reality television should be. I swear to God, it has every single box ticked. It's so amazing. It's like, on the one hand, I feel like really happy every time I watch it to see all of these like members of the queer community, like on TV, like making out and like living their normal lives just on TV. That's just a cool thing. I know we're like in 2019 and, you know, like things are coming along well, but this feels like just very straight up, like an honest, and I love that. And then two, it's just quality reality television because you've got the competing interests of money and love.
Well, they're supposed to be aligned interests if you believe the stated thesis of the show. Like,
it's right, absurd. But like, but humans are stupid. And so like what they do is they come in and they get their eyes on one person and they like screw them and they like say, we're together, we're a perfect match. They just like dive head first on day one. And then when they find out that they're not a match, or other people, they might not even find out for sure that they're not a match, but other people might be like, you have to break this up because we're going to lose. And they're like, no, we're a perfect match. We love each other. So like the whole group ends up spending like 4 weeks until they can prove this couple isn't a match, trying to keep each other. Oh, man, it is so good.
Yeah,
dude.
It is. It's a boiler of emotions. Like they just like put them all in there, pressure cook them. Like they at least in previous seasons, I think in this season too, they like select one of the criteria for selecting people is like, you are not good at relationships.
Yeah.
Like, like if you've screwed up horribly in the past, that's one key criteria you need to have to be in this.
Yeah.
Group.
They're all people who have like fundamentally fucked up their past relationships. And you can tell from the moment they get in there, you know, they're like, tell us about your past relationships. And it's like, I always choose cheaters, you know? And like one girl's like, I am insane with jealousy. And then she gets cheated on and her reaction to it is like incredibly calm. And the person she's dating is like, I'm a little bit confused because she says that she's really jealous and like kind of crazy, but she's acting really calm. And it's like, that would scare the shit out of me. Like, what is she thinking on the inside? Like, what is she going to do when I'm sleeping? I don't know. It's just, yes. Oh.
Yeah, it's really good. And it really is like this season is elevated. Like it used to be, I mean, it was obviously much more heteronormative. Like they basically just did all hetero guys and girls or whatever, right? And they were all just like vapid beach body idiots. And then they had on like the host was I want to get this right, I think it was Romeo, as in like little Romeo.
Oh man.
But now he's just Romeo.
He grew up.
And then this season, like, you know, it was like, all right, we took our tired thing, of which there are probably 8 million existing programs that are equivalent to this program, and then we like made it actually worthwhile in a way that was really great. So, kudos to them. But it also just made it far much more interesting television. So, it's good. Because like the other, they took the model. I think it was a UK show first, like Are You the One, if I'm not mistaken. That was like a spin out of X on the Beach, or no, I think it was American. Anyways, it was like one of those shows that they just like MTV, the MTV ecosystem of shows just birthed this one. Like they were like, oh yeah, we have like The Challenge, we have X on the Beach, we have whatever, like The Real World, and then it all just came together in this Are You the One mess or something. So, or it might have been reversed, I don't know. It's so weird.
I was reading something about Are You the One, like by the showrunners, and they were talking about how like one of the questions was, well, if they get 8 perfect matches on the first night, the show's over. And they were like, yeah, we kind of love that. Like,
yeah.
It's kind of amazing.
We would also never, ever.
Yeah, like, also, what are the odds, right? I'm, like, still trying to. So there's one character this season named Danny, who is, like, probably my favorite character so far, or person, human. And he's, like, a data analyst and software engineer. And he is always, his like, the first words out of his mouth for everything are like, statistically speaking. And I love that he just like is the guy who recaps what the stats are for everything, like probability and statistic wise.
Yeah, that's an interesting twist in this one, because there's usually people in the house who try to be the logical people. Like they're like, by the numbers, this is how it should work. But they have no background in it. And you're like in your head trying to check their math. And you're like, I don't think
yeah,
that's right.
I also don't quite know, but, you know, probability and statistics. I keep trying to do the math on like what the possibility. Oh, this is another thing, Anthony. If at any of the matchups they don't get any matches right, or they get zero matches right, then they lose $250,000 of the $1 million prize.
Wow,
it's like a real.
So the stakes are real.
Can't be fucking around.
So that's an iteration too, because they started off not having that, and then they realized like. It wasn't, there was not enough dramatic tension. So they added this in where you get a, I think they started with like 100,000 off, but they've upped it. But yeah, it does make things more tense. Like people are much more emotional.
Well, and like I had
striking out or potentially.
I had such a roller coaster ride of watching this, because I like, it all started with a tweet. I forget who sent it. I actually looked for it last night, but I couldn't find it. But it was someone said, like, how is this not the only thing we can talk about? And then it was the 8-minute trailer from MTV for the show. So I turned it on, and it started with all this emotion of like, wow, queer people on TV, like a queer dating show that's not Tila Tequila, because that didn't count. And like, you know, all of that. And then it just gets better and better. At one point, they go into like an island hut. You see like an aerial shot, and it's like a little hut on the beach. And then when they show them inside, they're in a tube with lasers. It's so many good things at once. It's the truth. But like, why on the outside does it look like an island hut, and then on the inside it looks like a spaceship with a TV screen?
Because that's how they tell. The lasers are used to diagnose.
And even like the final matchup ceremony, it's not like The Bachelor where that shit is like you could skip it and just see who's there next week. Like it doesn't even matter. This is like... You see all these people, every time a beam of light goes off, they literally lose their minds. They're like screaming and crying and dancing. It is so much good television all wrapped up into one show. I never would have guessed. So that's something I'm excited about. And then as a side note for something I'm excited about, Years and Years on HBO, which is probably more up everyone's alley, but I don't think anybody's watched it yet.
Yeah, I looked at it on my... TV. I was like, oh, this is that thing Jordan was talking about, so I'll probably watch it.
So tell us more about what it is.
It's pretty disheartening. So it's the story of the demise of society and civilized life on planet Earth as told through like a pretty average family in England. Like four adult children, two boys, two girls. Their grandma, not their mom, I think their parents are like out of the picture, but I don't know why, and their children, like their respective children and partners. And it starts in 2019 with the birth of one of the grandchildren, and then like one of the characters, so Emma Thompson's in it, she plays like an authoritarian politician who's running for parliament, and then the guy who's in Looking and a bunch of stuff, he always plays like a really hot gay guy, Russell Tovey. And he gives this monologue about like when the baby's born, about like, you know, oh, like what's it going to be like for you in like 20 years? Like this world just keeps getting worse. Like what's it going to be like for you in 10 years? What's it going to be like in 5 years? And it skips forward to 2024 in the first episode. And it kind of skips ahead quickly in time. I think that's like the point of it, like years and years, right? But it just goes through one horrible thing after another that like is very eerily close to what I believe our future may be on the track we're on right now as like a global civilization. So it's really intense, but it's good because it like keeps a really insular focus on this family. Like it doesn't really zoom. It's this family and this politician. And for the most part, for a while there, the politician is only seen through the screens of the families watching TV. So it really stays laser focused and has some character, hopefully more and more as we go, but you like kind of focus on their individual personal stories more than the outside world, which is, I think, is the point, you know, like that we something crazy happens, but we still get up the next day and like kind of go to work and keep going through the motions, even though we all kind of realize that the world is crumbling around us. I don't know. That's the feelings of it. It also has an incredible score. It's like drums and like a children's chorus as its score that is just both like energizing and terrifying. I don't like kind of cultish. It's got a lot happening. Very good.
Yeah, I just looked it up, and I guess it's also created by Russell T. Davies, who created Queer as Folk and did the revival of Doctor Who.
And Torchwood.
Right, and he created Torchwood. It's also crazy, yeah, that Emma Thompson's in this. I really was only vaguely aware that this show existed until Jordan started telling us all that we should watch
it. Yeah, I like need someone to talk to about it. So podcast listeners, like email me if you're watching it already. I'm ready to chat. We can Twitter about it, whatever you want. I mean, not whatever you want. We can Twitter or email. That's about it. But yeah, I think it's really interesting, really good. Emma Thompson does a great job. I mean, she's like the Trump of the British in a lot of ways. Like hyper nationalist rhetoric coming out of her and just very intense. it's very good. It's crazy. And it's like kind of all your worst nightmares rolled into one and like happening, but you're happy that they're happening on the screen and not in real life. But then you're like, oh, they might happen in real life. So it's crazy. It's good. I'm ready for Stranger Things now.
let's get into Stranger Things. So maybe where we can start is just talking a little bit about, you know, given that this is the third season and the first and second seasons were so hyped up. I mean, how do we feel about the show in general? Were we excited about Stranger Things 3?
I don't know. I kind of, it lost its luster after season one for me. I watched season two, but I felt like I was just going through the motions. So I was sort of indifferent about it coming back. I mean, it has its charm and its appeal for sure, but I kind of didn't care that much about it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like I was always going through the motions a little bit with Stranger Things. Like, it was really hyped up and everybody was obsessed with it. And I waited until, I think after season two came out and we talked about it on the podcast to actually watch it. I don't think, I was never on the bandwagon, really. And I think part of that is that I don't really enjoy shows where like kids are the protagonists, because they're either like unrealistic because kids are doing things that kids aren't really actually capable of, or they're realistic and the kids are making stupid decisions as kids will do, which just like frustrates me. So it's like also particularly when like kids are solving like grown up problems, you know what I mean? Which I think is like 100% what Stranger Things is. It's like a bunch of kids like, oh, I'm going to solve the mystery that like the US government couldn't figure out, you know? And it's like, okay.
Yeah, it's them in the most like, oh, why isn't a grown up handling this type scenario possible? And then they keep ratcheting that up constantly.
Right. I think if it happened once, you would go along with it. But the fact that every season that turns out to be the case, it becomes increasingly, I mean, it started out implausible and it becomes more implausible.
Right. Which like it's already operating in a world of implausibility, though. Like we're talking about like a world of alternate realities and stuff. So like you get a little leeway with that. But
sure. But yeah, I also hate children. So that is another part.
Oh my God, let that silence hang for a minute before you say children. Jeez. Like you couldn't even remember the name for small humans. Like what is the word for that thing that I hate so much? Yeah. Children. It's the children that I hate. I mean, I'm cool with kids in small doses. And like these age kids are like relatively tolerable. It's another unrealistic thing that like all these 14-year-olds would be like generally good. Like isn't a 14-year-old like the enemy of the people? It's like the most evil human being that walks the planet is a 14-year-old boy or girl. Like how are they also like loving and kind and like generally smart? I just don't get that. But I don't know. I'm talking
well because it feels like it sort of, it starts out with like, especially the first episode is about this idea that, okay, they're teenagers now. And I mean, it's kind of like crazy just seeing how much older some of the kids look. Like, I think the guy who plays Mike has become this very sort of gawky teenager in a way that like, I mean, his voice is different. Like, it's just takes a while to get used to, but is also about this idea that they're teenagers and that they're kind of like these really bratty, annoying teenagers. But basically, once the plot kicks into motion, that becomes a much, much smaller part. And like you were saying, Jordan, it becomes much more like, oh, they're all going to band together again. And the dynamic is basically the same dynamic. Again, I haven't finished the whole season yet, but from what I've seen, is still like the same dynamic of the previous seasons. And they're still essentially good people who get along and want, and are willing to, you know, fight these evil demons and that, you know, so the teenage stuff was there, but then it sort of gets brushed aside relatively quickly.
Well, and then there's like the piece of like,
yeah,
the fantasy part that kind of throws me off, or sci-fi, you could call it either one, I guess. I'm not really sure where alternate realities fit in, probably sci-fi. I don't know, but there's also monsters. It's hard to tell. But wherever that piece comes in, like, I'm going to start needing some answers. Like, I don't like living in a world that has like a few changed rules, and that those changed rules don't, we're just supposed to like tolerate them and accept them. I just like, I need like a, go back 1,000 years and tell me how these alternate universes formed at some point. Do you know what I mean? I just like get a little bit annoyed by that. Because I fall into it and I'm like, oh, this is cool. Like, look at the rats. And then I'm like, but wait, what is this? Like, what is happening here exactly? You know? And I feel like even 3 seasons in, and this could be partially to do with me not paying the closest attention while watching this show, because it doesn't keep my attention. I don't really have any apologies for that. But like, I don't understand what the whole space monster mind flayer, I don't understand, what is all of that?
It's just from the under, what do they call it again,
the upside down, but like, what is that down. Like, are we just supposed to take it like that's, yeah, the rule of watching the show is like, we just have to accept that this is a thing, we don't need to know why.
At some point they said it was like alternate dimension,
right? I think there's been an explanation, but it's very sort of perfunctory. It's just, it's like, hey, yeah, we'll just, yeah, tell you, and then we'll never, I mean, because certainly my experience, and some of this is just because I watched each season roughly around the time it came out and then haven't revisited it, but like, I went into this having almost, I remembered all the characters, but I remembered almost nothing about the backstory and about all that sort, yeah, of world building stuff. And to me, that is just like, oh, the mind flayer, he's an evil demon from another dimension, that is really all I remember.
And I like fucked, yeah, up big time and pressed skip recap.
Oh.
Because, you know, like on Netflix, you're so ready to press the skip intro button, but it was the recap. And there, I couldn't figure it out how to get back to it. It's like the built in one from like the Netflix home screen.
Right.
You know what I mean?
The first where it, time. Like,
yeah, exactly. And then like it wouldn't let me rewind to it. It just kept showing me the like Netflix cue in. I was like,
yeah,
damn it.
I watched the recap, but I don't remember it. I don't remember what I took away from it. So I don't know that it would have helped you that much.
Yeah.
Like there wasn't much really. It was like, oh yeah, remember this thing? It was kind of there before and it stood up and it was really big. And it was kind of in this guy over here, the little guy. Yeah, it's that thing again. Like,
yeah,
that's basically all the setup you need to know. It's weird in that I feel like the show has done a lot to try to like tease out some of the details of the specifics of the villains, like contrary to what we were just talking about. But then it also seems to not really matter that much because it's all just to the service of being like, these are scary, nightmare-y type monsters, and they're scary.
They are scary. You are scared. They are scared. We are all scared.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but like, to be fair though, with the like explaining what the hell the upside down is and all these bad guys or bad monsters are, like, it's not a show that's properly equipped to be able to do that, right? Like, which character delivers us that information? Like, maybe L, maybe.
Oh, like the recap?
Yeah, but no, not the recap, but like, who's gonna crack the code of what the hell upside down is in the beginning, right? Like, maybe a Russian general will explain it at some point, but like, it's not like we're equipped with the characters to get to the bottom of what that is. They're accepting it for what it is, so we're supposed to as an audience, and I get that, but I don't like that either.
Well, to its credit too, like, there's not really any room for it. Like, they don't The pace of the show, especially this season, and this isn't spoilery, but it's just a general comment, it is such that it's like there's no real room for world building or like tangents that go into some of the details, because everything's moving so fast and there's a lot of like this stuff is happening right now concurrently, plots going on simultaneously. So it's pretty busy as it is. Like, I just don't think they would have room to do that.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. There were a ton of like really short scenes. Well, like feasibly what are long scenes if they were filmed and like edited to be standalone on their own. But there are like maybe four different things happening at once, and four different scenes are happening concurrently. And so you get those four different scenes like parceled out amongst one another. Just felt like really quick, like we were moving from one thing to the next so fast that I was like, I felt like the whole episode is just like 5 minute cliffhangers, you know? You're like, oh wait, what's gonna happen to those guys? And then you're like, nope, now you're back here. It's like, oh, what's gonna happen to those guys? Nope, now you're back over there, you know? Like, damn, show me what's gonna happen.
Yeah
it's a good thing. I don't think that's a bad thing, but it's just,
yeah, and I will say, especially compared to season two, I remember, I mean, I enjoyed season two, and I think some people, there was, I think backlash is a little bit too strong of a word, but like sort of the excitement kind of had worn off. I thought it was like pretty much as good as season one, except that I think they added an extra episode and they didn't quite have enough plot for 9 episodes. So season two, I remember just kind of, I liked the sort of hangout stuff, but the story, they really didn't feel like they had 9 episodes worth of story. And here it feels like they really do have a lot of plot that they're going through fairly quickly. So I don't have that moment where I'm kind of like, oh, like this is going to be an episode where not a lot happens and people are just kind of standing around talking. It seems like fairly quickly, like stuff is happening.
Do you guys feel, so my opinion, and I don't have like a huge recollection of season one and season two, but I don't remember feeling this level of like capital N nostalgia 80s vibes as much as season three. Like the yeah. mall in particular, like,
and just seeing all the different like restaurants and the food court and the stores, yeah, and all that.
Yeah. And like when they go into the gas station and open up 3 different sodas, you know, like like, I don't know what it was. It was like Parliaments or something thrown down on the gas station counter. I just like a couple of the 80s moments are just really like poignant. You know, I just feel like they worked really well in this season. I think they did it better in season three than the others.
Oh, so you liked it. You liked that they had more nostalgia, but you thought it was like done really effectively.
I thought it was done better. Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't feel like I was ever really all that. There was some good music, I guess, in season one and season two, but I don't know if there was any imagery that really like hit me. But like 4th of July, swimming pools, ice cream at the mall, and this is said from someone who was born in 88, like I didn't experience any of this in the 80s actually, but like my idea of it, of what it mm-hmm. would be like, this felt closest to it, you know what I mean? And like just really like I was like, oh wow, look at that, you know, like look at all those neon signs in the mall food court. Like, I don't know, it just like hit me harder than I think like D&D in the basement did, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's true for me too, although it's also interesting because it makes me think of like when I imagine the 80s. So I'm a bit older, I was born in 83, but like still, like, you know, most of my actual memories are from the 90s, I realize. And so when I think of the 80s, it's actually movie memories of the 80s. I remember
exactly
what childhood looks like in The Goonies. I remember what it looks like in E.T. I remember what it looks like in The Karate Kid. So in some ways, and I think the Duffer brothers, who are the creators and showrunners, they're roughly my age. It's really depressing to think about. But like they, they're, you know, so I think they're also like younger than the character, you know, they were not teenagers in the 80s. They were around, but not really. So in a lot of ways, they're also just recreating these movie memories rather than memories of the 80s.
Right. Well, that's like in the show, Back to the Future appears, right? Like the film. And that was what it was like for me too. Like, it was like, oh yeah, this feels like a mirror of Back to the Future, of like what his situation was, right? Which again, I saw later than when it was actually happening. I think that's exactly what you're saying, Anthony, right? Like it was like, it's like a set recreation of the sets that they witnessed in the media they consumed, right? And so for that, I do feel, because I feel like the, and there's been a little bit of chatter about how this one's like maybe even too on the nose when it comes to pressing the nostalgia buttons, but like if you think about it that way, where like, well, it's not, it's almost exaggerated, it's cartoonish in the way that a lot of the rest of the program is cartoonish, mm-hmm. right? Like the kids running around, like the aliens. I mean, there's a lot here that is exaggerated yeah. about reality. And even I think the nostalgia and the 80s set dressing is also an example of that.
What did you guys think of the story? Or I mean, I guess maybe in general, like, are there particular storylines that you found interesting or particularly annoying? Again, without getting into spoilers yet, because I guess partly I asked that because to me, like, one of the ones that really sticks out is the newspaper storyline, because I did not like it almost at all.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could definitely have done without that. I don't think, I don't know.
Well, it got us where we were going, though. Like,
in a really roundabout way, though.
Yeah, but I mean, right? Isn't her findings, like, important to spur on the entire situation as we know it?
Yeah, I didn't mind that. I just I felt like it was just for several episodes, it was just like every scene that was in the newspaper office, my teeth were like gritting. And granted, like some of that's intentional. It's to show that it's this sort of old boys club. And so we should say that the two of the characters, the teenage characters, or they're kids, but they're not the younger kids, are interning at the newspaper, the Hawkins Post. And there's just a lot of scenes of this sort of old boys club at the newspaper treating both of them, but particularly, I can't remember her name.
Nancy.
Yeah, Nancy. Treating Nancy like shit.
I mean, they're treating her like they would treat her in the 80s.
I think it's believable. Like, it's just as scenes, they're not dramatic. I just find them not very dramatically satisfying. Every time we cut back to the paper, I was like, all right, here we go again.
Yeah, I mean, it's also kind of grating, but like there's also it wasn't my favorite thing in the world. I agree with you. But like I did have a thought of, and this, I've only seen a few episodes of Mad Men, but part of the reason why I quit watching Mad Men was because like it felt like a very honest portrayal of how men treated women back then. But I mean, it may be still to this day in places, but like, mm-hmm. it didn't feel like there were consequences for it, or like, and moreover, like some of your favorite characters were the people who were acting like dicks. And then the people being treated that way are also some of your favorite characters and aren't really doing anything about it. And it just felt like very like, this is how it is, just deal with it. And like, at least in Stranger Things, when those scenes come up, those guys look like idiots for what they're doing. Right. Like they are clearly the bad guys. Mm-hmm. And like, the ones to hate in that scene, at least. So like that, I don't know. I found myself being like, well, at least they're like little kids watching this, or like teenagers watching this, or seeing that like those are the assholes, right? Like that's still clear to everyone watching this. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
What else stood out to people? I mean, in terms of things that you thought were well or not particularly well done.
It had the same thing. I think Jordan mentioned something about this with the second season, but like it was tricky for me to maintain continuous attention for like throughout the series. Like I just kind of was like, I was popping in and out, and maybe it was the conditions of watching it where I was trying to watch it all like in spare moments here or there before recorded this podcast. But like it wasn't keeping my attention. I was just kind of going like, okay. Oh, I know what's going to happen. Yeah, now they're going to have another monster fight or whatever. I can zone out for this and then like tune back in once the monster fight has happened. And like, oh, here's the zany chase scene. I'll just tune out for this part. I don't need to know the details, and then I'll tune back in. Right. Like, so I really found my attention waning, and I was spending a lot of time just like, oh, I wonder what's going on Twitter over here. Even though, like I said earlier, like the pace is there, and objectively it's a fast paced, show overall with a lot of action and a lot of like what are on screen high energy moments, but for me as a viewer, I just wasn't invested in them. Like, I just didn't care that they were going on a lot of the time. Hmm. Right. So I don't know if, again, maybe it's a part of, I really like the first season, and then I felt like the other two are a bit extraneous, or like, I just don't know why it's continuing, or if it's just like the conditions of watching, but something meant that it did not like grab and keep my attention. It was very much like something that I was super casually.
Well, it also, consuming. I feel like it kind of is similar to, this is going to sound weird, but I have a point. The Handmaid's Tale.
Okay.
Because like, at a certain point when you watch The Handmaid's Tale, you start to drift attention-wise too, or maybe not you, but I do. And part of that is because like I've started to lose faith that anyone's going to solve any of the problems. And that's kind of how I feel with Stranger Things too, where it's like, nobody's going to answer my real questions. And I have a real good feeling that everyone at the end of the season is going to feel like everything's solved, and next season it won't be. We're going to have the same upside down problem, you know? And it's like, I don't know, it's hard to, I don't feel like we're moving super forward as much as we're like taking one step forward, two steps back over and over again with this.
Yeah.
So like plot wise, so like I stop paying super close attention to the plot, and meanwhile like find myself really drawn into these like random mall montages, you know? So I'm like, oh, that's cute, like I could watch that, gives me some feels. But like the monster fights, I don't like really care as long as Elle doesn't die, you know?
Yeah I was also like similarly, like there was a lot of moments where I was like, oh, that's a really great shot, like that's super interesting in terms of the angle of the shot, or like the composition of the shot, where they put the characters and stuff. Like that I felt like was much more interesting than the actual plot, which exactly like you said, like it just felt like, all right, I guess they hit the reset button from last season and we're just going again. And that's what everyone has felt like to me so far. I don't know.
It's interesting because the way they title these seasons is they don't say Stranger Things season 1, 2, and 3. It's Stranger Things, Stranger Things 2, and Stranger Things 3, and presumably 4, and if they have more after that, the same idea. And in some ways, it does feel closer in spirit to a franchise of horror movies where you don't expect with A Nightmare on Elm Street 3 or Friday the 13th 5 that you're necessarily going to get answers to questions. It's more like, oh, the monster is going to come back and you're going to have more adventures, you know, fighting this monster. And I think that's fine. I don't mind that. I don't necessarily care what the answers are to, like, that there's going to be some grand unifying theory about the upside down, but it does create this sense of diminishing returns of like, oh, we're just doing this again. And I think that's not entirely as true with the third season, because just having the characters aged up a bit, moving forward a little bit in time. And so just the way the characters have evolved, I think when it does have a feeling of freshness, it's more because of the characters, not because of the story, because the story does really just feel like, oh, okay, cool, like more bad guys. I mean, the dynamics of what's actually happening and how the monster is entering this world and what its plan is slightly different, but fundamentally, the reason that Stranger Things 3 feels at least a little bit different from the first two seasons for me is because of the characters evolving, not because of anything to do with the
plot.
And
I'm sure like the stakes have gone up with the monsters too. Like, I think I probably would say that with more certainty if I like clearly remembered seasons 1 and season 2. But I think those who like rewatch season 1 and 2 to do season 3 are like, oh, these monsters are badass, you know? But like, it just feels like a little bit more of the same, given that I don't remember the last monsters.
Yeah, well, they do have like, I guess the ingredient of the Russians. Like, that's not a spoiler because it's immediate.
Right.
But like, I don't know, it's, you're right. I think Anthony's right that it's the real change and the real progress is the character development. And there's some like nice stuff going on with Elle becoming a human basically and like growing up. And yeah, I think those parts are more interesting than the rest of the monster fighty stuff. But I think you're spot on with the, I never really thought of it that way. Now that I think of it that way, it's a bit more forgivable. Like, if I think of it as I don't know, Halloween 1, 2, or 3, right? Like, it's like, oh, okay. I mean, you totally accept, like, yeah, the guy comes back, or the monster, he's just back again to do the same killing again, right? Like, that as a narrative framework, whether or not, like, I think that's a good thing to do, I think if that's the approach they were taking, that's successful.
Well, it
right?
does feel so, intentional. Like, it doesn't feel like yeah. they are, have run out of stories. Like, it feels like this was the plan, you know, to keep this thread going, which is fine. Yeah. I have to say, though, that it, when we're talking about, like, character development, Winona Ryder is so funny in this season to me. I like, she has me cracking up left and right. I'm loving her performance.
Yeah, she's
super
much
dynamic.
Better now that she's, it's like, compare it to season one, where it's, she was
in
just
fear
like,
and like constantly yeah, like crying, yeah. like the one of the two all, over and over again.
Which made sense. Yeah,
this is way better.
Yeah, like I understood why. I mean, I think that was what they were going for. It's not like,
yeah, she wasn't,
you know, she was giving
funny
that performance
in season one.
Right.
Yeah.
But over the course of the 3 years, we've been able to see her sort of show a lot, like become a much more complete person rather than just a mother at the very end of her tether.
Yeah. And I really enjoyed it. I thought, I mean, maybe funnier than I've ever seen Winona Ryder be in anything. I don't think she's necessarily like known for her comedy, but I thought it was really good. Good performance by her.
Should we have a quick spoiler discussion and we can talk a little bit about some of the plot details?
Sure.
Yeah. Should we give recos like a final reco before
sure.
spoilers?
Yeah, let's do that.
So, you want to start?
Okay. Well, I mean, I think it's entertaining. I think it's like, if you're looking for something that is fun, and especially if you like the first two seasons, you should definitely watch this. If I would say, if you're someone who hasn't yet entered into the Stranger Things world, I think there's better things to spend your time on. I think you should go watch like some of the
Are You the One
new like the or The Rain like something on even
Rain.
On Netflix that's like, is it just called
no,
Rain?
The Rain? No, it's called The Rain. I'm just I, no, it's okay. Like 2 weeks in a row that you've brought up The
you
Rain.
You really like The Rain, man. Well,
but I just feel like there are other things that are probably more interesting, unless you want a really specific type of thing, which is basically like an 80s movie redress, like a revisit of like the 80s comedy horror coming of age story thing.
Wow.
So most people probably don't need this. They'd be better served by other things, unless they're like of a very specific.
Although age. I would counter that, given the popularity of the show and particularly of the first season, there are a lot of people who seem to want this, and it seems to scratch some sort of itch for them. If they just want, hey, did you like 80s movies? Here's more of the same stretched out over 8 or 9 hours. And yeah, I would agree essentially that I think, basically, if you watch Stranger Things season one, that is more or less what you're going to get with Stranger Things 2 and 3. And so if you feel like you got everything you needed from one, then I don't think there's any particular reason to keep going. But I think, you know, the next two seasons are both entertaining and fun, and I don't like regret watching them. I just don't think they advance in any notable way from the first season.
Yeah, I think it's like easy viewing. Yes. I would put it in my category of like multitasker viewing, or particularly like if you haven't seen it yet and haven't felt like the pull, because honestly, like we're at season 3 and people are talking about this show. So if you haven't done it yet, there's a reason why you haven't done it yet. Like that should be like a good back pocket show when you were literally at a loss to find anything to watch and you just want something that's really easy and fun. Like this is that. But I, you know, if you don't feel called to that very specific brand of TV that Anthony just described and Daryl just described, then you don't need to do this, I don't think. With love, it's good. It's good TV. Like I'm not trying to shit on it or anything, but like,
no. And to help recommend that kind of idea of it being like a very casual watch or background watch, like when I was talking about how I kind of, my attention waned in and out, like I still never felt like I was missing any key ingredients to what was going on, or that the stuff that I was missing was crucial to my understanding of like the general plot. So I think it's super good as a casual watch.
All right, so spoilers for Stranger Things 3. If you don't want to be spoiled, stop listening. Daryl, how did you feel about the ending?
I mean, I don't deeply unsatisfied. Okay. I don't know.
I haven't gotten there yet.
It's just, it's kind of a reset button type thing, which I think both of you were expecting. Mm-hmm. And it just sets up, it does like, okay, so to put in the language of like the characters and then also the sort of plot that ties them together, like the characters all progress to the next stage of their human development, basically, right? Like they realize things about, oh, what it's like to be a teenager and relationships or whatever. And then, but the monster goes away, and then like, oh, maybe the monster will come back. Tune in next time, like that kind of thing, right? So it's not, it doesn't break the mold in terms of what's happened so far. And it doesn't at all make me care that much about what is going to happen next season. Like that's, I think they did this well in season one, but they haven't done it well since, where at the end of it, the thing that they're teasing seems significantly different and more interesting and like drives your curiosity about like, oh, wait, what's this next phase of monsterdom going to be? It looks quite different than what we saw before, right? Because I remember in that season one of season two, it was like, oh, it's not just like this little sort of human-sized monster. It's something huge and something that's going to overtake like the whole town and whatever. Like it looked like it was on a different scale of threat. And I don't know how granular you want me to get here with the spoilers at the end of this one, but it was...
I don't care.
Well, it's just like, okay, it's same stakes. It's actually like back to start same stakes. It's like, oh, okay.
What about the Russians? Do they get resolved?
Well, they're there. They're the ones who have this thing. And you're just like, I guess the Russians are still going to be there. I don't know. And they try to do a real emotional piece with like one of the main characters. I don't know, again, if you want me to spoil that, but it's unsuccessful in that they try to do that and then you're like, okay, but I know that they probably didn't actually do this permanently, and then they reveal that no, they didn't do this permanently in a sort of like oblique way, which I guess maybe some people would miss if they're really not paying attention, but like,
seriously, but he's not that, he or she is not really dead.
Yeah. That seems very obvious from the ending. It was exhausting in that it's like, you haven't surprised me thus far. You like, you did initially. Initially you put together a very surprising piece of media that was like, what? Like, what is this? Why does this exist in this way with all these pieces? And then after that, you've just consistently delivered the same thing again. And all the setup is signals, hey, we're going to give you the same thing again. Like, don't get your hopes up, basically, is the takeaway I had from the ending. So I don't know. I don't know that I will make it through another one of these, basically. I will say that I did not have high hopes for this season because of my experience with season two. I enjoyed this a lot more than I thought I was going to. I enjoyed season three. I thought like just because of technical execution and some of the writing and again, some of the cinematography and shots, like it made it worthwhile. I didn't feel like it was a waste of time, but I just don't know that I have the energy or the desire to spend the time to watch it again based on the setup that they kind of left you with.
I guess hopefully, I think they don't necessarily want to drag this out for too many more years. So if season four is the final season, then despite what I said earlier, maybe it'll be a kind of a different story because it'll be trying to wrap up some of the, you know, some of the plot lines, even if it's not going to be sort of incredibly satisfying answers, it'll still have a different tone because it'll be the last one potentially.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that could save it. If it was like, no, this is definitely the cap or like that, then I'm in, right? But if it's a thing that's going to get extended, I don't know. I don't know if I have the patience for that anymore. But yeah, it was so disappointing in the ending to have it end the way it did. And then I was like, oh, okay, they're probably going to do a thing where they come back after maybe a couple minutes of the credits and then set us up with and undo all the things that were actually interesting and dramatic about this. And that's exactly what they did. So, you know, a little disappointing.
So stick around after the credits, even though it might make you mad.
Well, it's not really after the credits. They like they don't even do that, because then that would be interesting because some people would tune out or whatever. Or, I mean, you probably wouldn't because of Netflix's auto end thing, and they wouldn't do that to the program. But it's really like a couple credits, like directed by these people, and then right into the return footage stuff.
How does Eleven fare at the end?
I mean, she's fine. She's just like, you know, she's got to move on. She's grown up. So the interesting thing they do with Eleven is they do a nice bait and switch with her powers, right? Which have always been kind of a Deus Ex Machina device. Like and they do it through the season. Like in parts you've already seen, I'm sure they've done it a number of times already because they consistently do it. Whereas like, well, I mean, whatever else happens and however dire, as long as Eleven shows up and then she can go ahead and use her whatever telekinesis, like she can just smash things and then also just rip them apart. And basically all she needs to do ever is get angry enough that she can exert that power more fully, right? And there's no real problem that she encounters that can like trump that. But what they do in this is they set that up and it gets to the point where you're lulled into this like, okay, I mean, here's what's going to happen. The big monster is going to come over, or one of the bad people is going to come over, and then she's going to smash them up. And they do that, and they satisfy that. So then it gets you lulled. But then at one point it's like, oh, she doesn't have anything anymore. She doesn't have any powers. They can't. And it's like just in time for the final conclusion. So that's gone. Like your crutch is gone. The storytelling crutch is gone, which is nice. And it doesn't come back by the end of the show. So that's interesting. That's the one interesting thing that was a little bit like, oh, wow, okay. So they didn't like develop her, like next level her or do anything with it. They just kind of took away her like special ability, which was the one thing that actually did justify like, why are these kids handling all this stuff? It's like, oh, yeah, right. They do have the extraterrestrial super being or whatever she is, right? So when they take that away, that is a satisfying storytelling moment, like one of the few successful, well, not few successful ones, that's not fair, but one of the ones that was surprising and interesting and at least gave them a little narrative puzzle that they had to work their way out of to get to the conclusion they did get to, which is like them victorious, right?
I would also say in general that I feel like they just do more, it seems like they're doing more interesting things with her this season than they were last season, because it seemed like in season two, they really just weren't sure, like for the reasons that you were outlining, they couldn't have her just kind of hanging around because then she could kind of just defeat the monsters and solve all the problems. Or at least it would not be as scary or as challenging for the other characters. And so she basically like, you know, gets shuffled off stage for a lot of the season and then has that one episode to herself where, you know, she meets up with all these people who are like her and then returns at the very last minute for the finale. And so in a lot of ways is not really present.
Wait, that happened? I don't remember.
Yeah. There's a whole standalone episode with like, you know, the gang of like telekinetic.
Oh, now I remember.
Which I didn't love, but I liked that it was so different from the rest of the show. So like I was willing to go with it. But I think it really meant that she like this. There's this sort of void in season two where Elle has just kind of disappeared. And in this case, it really seems like as a character, she's really front and center. And so even though there are still moments where you're talking about, she sort of just shows up and, you know, makes her face and then can save the rest of the characters. I just appreciate that they're, you know, developing her character more and making it, you know, as much as it's anyone's show, it's her show again.
Yeah. 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 No, they're doing more with the character, which is good. And they aren't going that route, though. Now that I remember that route, I want to take a moment to criticize it because I feel like that was dumb.
the other teenager.
Yeah. I don't have anything more to say about it. I just don't like it.
Jordan, did you like the girl gang from season two? Oh no, not girls. Just
the gang
just
from season two.
There's a whole episode where she like leaves because she disappears for several episodes, and then you find out what she's been doing is she was in the big city with this gang of kids who all have.
Are we still talking about Stranger Things? So
we are, yeah. Isn't it? Because I had blocked this out entirely too. Because it was.
How does season one end with her, with Winona Ryder's boyfriend getting eaten by the small monster? And
no, that's season two.
Yeah, I didn't see season two. I just don't have any recollection of Elle going to hang out with a gang of children.
Well, like Anthony said, it was a weird one-off. It was like an isolated episode, right?
Yeah.
Like it just contained Elle within one episode. But it also is not referenced at all in this season.
Yeah, I think they're kind of like, let's pretend that didn't happen.
I have a faint memory of that. Maybe?
Yeah, once Anthony or I remember it now, but it didn't enter into my brain at all before that. So, I mean, also in this one, Paul Reiser shows up at one point, and I was like, oh yeah, Paul Reiser. Because he's in season two, but he's not really in this one that much until the very end.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm excited that I get to see him again.
Yeah, you get a brief look at Paul Reiser. And, the other thing with this one, I was a little bit, I was of two minds about our buddy Sheriff Hellboy. Goodness, what's his actual name?
Hopper?
Hopper, there you go.
Hopper. He alternately, like, annoyed the hell out of me and also was great, depending. And I still don't know exactly how
I feel. I'm real divided on him. He has some good moments, and then he has some, like, what? Moments?
Yeah.
Apparently people are liking his attire, though. I saw on Twitter, it was one of my moments.
The attire is pretty good. It feels very Magnum P.I.
Yeah.
But yeah, sort of his whole shtick of like, I'm this like grizzled guy who like drinks too much and like, you know, doesn't follow the rules, but is still like a good guy. I feel like, guys, I mean, I think the actor is really charming, but like my interest in the character, I don't know that I was ever that interested in him, but it's definitely not very high right now.
Well, I think also the actor, I also have liked him, you know, previously. I think what he did in this one is maybe got a little too high on his own supply and decided to kind of like 2X okay. everything. And it feels a bit much, but good acting or good actors. Like Carrie Elwes in this, and that was pretty nice. That was a surprise that I did not expect.
He still looks great.
He does look great. He looks fantastic as the scumbag mayor. And that's another one of those moments where it's like, oh, definitely like Princess Bride is an influence to the filmmakers, right? Like it's of the era, even though it wasn't set in like the 80s or anything. And it's cool to see that he's actually in the movie, which is fun, or the show.
Yeah, the people they've brought back, like from that they've cast from 80s movies, I think mostly I've actually, that's been one of the forms of nostalgia that I've been like totally on board with, when they're just like, hey, you like Paul Reiser, you like Sean Astin, let's have him in this. And I'm like, great, yeah, please. Well, we can probably wrap it up there. Just a quick reminder for everyone who's listening that if you enjoy the show, you can or if you don't, you can email us at originalcontent@techcrunch.com. If you've got something interesting to say, we'll read it on the show. You can also subscribe or leave us a review in Apple Podcasts or any other podcast app. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Jordan and Daryl, have a great weekend. Yeah,
and call me about Years and Years.
Years and Years.
Count. Yeah, I'll watch it. We'll